know what we need? We need a radio show on the air, like maybe on Saturday nights, that talks about this kind of thing.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman here. I want to let my listeners know about a brilliant Renaissance man named Dr. Arthur Perry.
You want to talk to Arthur Perry? The best in plastic surgery.
He's a distinguished, award-winning cosmetic surgeon trained at Harvard and Cornell with a practice in New York City on Fifth Avenue.
Dr. Oz, are you there?
I'm here, Arthur, and I want to again applaud you, having worked with you on a book and numerous other activities.
He's written numerous medical journal articles, and he's contributed to textbooks on plastic surgery.
Your remarkable knowledge, but also your grace at delivering content, which is why it's been a blessing to have you on my show so many times.
It's clear that when it comes to skin and aging, this doctor knows what he's talking about.
Joan, the public wants to know.
The public doesn't give a damn.
As a really, really gifted physician, I want to pay you the highest tribute I can give to a surgeon, which is when people come to you, they don't come for an operation, they come for an opinion. And that's why I trust you with my friends and relatives.
When I was a resident at the University of Chicago, we had a...
That means you're smart.
I didn't realize we were going to get the Michael Jordan of plastic surgeon. 90210 bows to this guy.
And welcome. This is Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle right here on WABC. What a wonderful day it is. Have you been outside? I hope you've been outside today. It's low humidity. It's a reasonable day, unlike yesterday, which was really a tough day. Everybody had to stay indoors. But today was beautiful, and I hope you're enjoying it. And I hope you're in the car right now listening to me as you go into the city or out to your destination and are interested in what you look like, because this is the show about you. This is the cosmetic surgery show, the plastic surgery show, the dermatology show, the show about beauty, the show about what you look like. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon, the host of this show for 13 years on various New York radio stations. Happy to be at WABC, where the phone number is 800-848-9222, 800-848-WABC, and I've got a great show planned for you tonight. I've got so many things to talk about. I hope we get it all in, and I hope we get your phone calls in also, 800-848-9222. Tonight, we are going to be talking about your nose. Yes, rhinoplasty, one of my favorite I guess it really is my favorite procedure, and I'll tell you why in a few minutes, but we're going to talk about your nose. We're going to be talking about what I consider to be a very controversial thing I saw on the internet. A woman who wants to ban cosmetic surgery. You can't believe this stuff, but I'm going to talk to you about why she thinks cosmetic surgery should be banned in the United States and really what the benefits of cosmetic surgery are, and they go way beyond what you are thinking. We're also going to be talking about the wrinkles on your face. Yes, we all have them. If you're in your late 40s, you're seeing your wrinkles, sometimes even in your 30s, depending on what kind of punishment you've done to your skin. So we're going to talk about the CO2 laser, the laser that I'm using for wrinkles, in addition to fillers and things like that. So we'll talk about that. I'm going to talk to you about some snake oil. Yeah, not the snake oil you've heard about, but how about snake oil that makes your hair grow? We're going to talk about that. It's not really snake oil, but it just as well could be. And we're going to be talking about sunscreen dishonesty. Oh, my favorite topics. I've got so much to talk about. I don't know how much I'll get to today, because it depends on how many of your phone calls we take. You know, some days it's a busy board and some days it's not. Tonight we're giving away nighttime. What is nighttime? It's the one-stop shop. What do you mean, what's nighttime? It's the one-stop shopping for skincare. It's really the only thing you need. If you chose one thing, it should be nighttime. And the reason for it is I put the things that really make a difference, the things that are scientifically proven, the things that work, not the, you know what I'm talking about, the stuff that doesn't work, the stuff that's fantasy, the stuff that can't possibly work, the stuff that they charge you an arm and a leg for, and you wonder, was there really a scientist involved in this company? I don't know, but vitamin A, vitamin C, fruit acids, milk thistle, those are the things that are scientifically proven. Those are the things that make a difference. That's what I put in one serum. It's a serum, not a cream. A lot of people say, well, why didn't you make it nice and creamy like a moisturizer? You don't need that on your skin. It's just not necessary. So I try to put only the things that make a difference. I left out the things that are toxic. I left out the things that don't make a difference. And the studies have shown that my skin cream, nighttime, not a cream. I call it a cream. It's a serum. nighttime actually does improve the appearance of skin. It lessens the appearance of wrinkles. You know, we use euphemisms in skincare. I can't say legally that it decreases wrinkles and increases collagen synthesis, because those are terms that the FDA does not allow. So I and other companies have to say things like it improves the appearance of your skin and decreases the appearance of wrinkles. Well, it does, and I've got photographs on my website to show it. I've got blog posts that I've written showing the research. So go to drperrys.com and take a look. But you're going to get your bottle tonight, a bottle of nighttime, if you give me a call, 800-848-9222. All right, the nose is the center of your face. How can you look at someone without seeing their nose? You can't. You can't. And so many people are very self-conscious about their nose. You know, and with the advent of selfies and the iPhone, you know, the nose actually gets distorted in those photographs. And people in plastic surgery have, you know, they've gotten their PR people to say, oh, look, the selfie generation has increased people being concerned about rhinoplasties because their noses are big. No, that's actually not true. It's actually because of the distortion that is seen in taking photographs like that. It makes your nose look bigger. So if you're a professional photographer, you'll do a much better job than if you're you taking a selfie, particularly aiming and holding your arm real far out and trying to take a picture of yourself. Your nose looks enormous. So please don't base your decisions for cosmetic surgery on selfies. But rhinoplasties have been around for a long time. In fact, about 100 or so years. And they started out with operations that made incisions inside the nose. You never knew if the surgeon was any good in the beginning because he'd jiggle his instruments around. The assistants could never really see what was going on. And voila, at the end of the case, the nose was substantially smaller. And I mean substantially. Back in the 1960s, boy, they really pulled apart the bones and the cartilages of the nose. And you can walk around the Upper East Side of Manhattan right now to see some of those 1960s rhinoplasties. You know what I'm talking about. They're overdone. They're scooped out. They're shortened. You can look into people's nostrils. You look in. It's that what we call that pig nose appearance. You know, I did a rhinoplasty on a pig last year, but that's a whole different story. But in you, we don't want you to look like Popo the pig. We want you to look like you. And the goal of a rhinoplasty in the 2010s, you know, where we are now, 2018, what is the name of this decade, by the way, 2010s? The goal now is very different from what it was in the 1960s. You know, back in the 1960s, when rhinoplasties were done, they were very radical procedures, and they were radical because in the beginning of rhinoplasty, which really was, even though they were done earlier, the age of rhinoplasty was the 1960s when it really became popular. And those procedures were very radical, and they were radical because plastic surgeons did not appreciate the degree of swelling and the degree of change that occurred in the nose over the not just months, not just years, but decades after rhinoplasties. So in order to get a good result, it was thought that huge changes had to be performed. The nose was taken down in almost quarter-inch increments and shortened significantly. We've learned over the years that that's not the way to do it. And in fact, I always tell my patients, if your nose looks perfect, when I take that splint off, I've overdone it. And the reason for that is because there's swelling at the time the splint comes off, and there's swelling that continues for a long time and scarring that continues for a long time. And in fact, a nose doesn't stop changing for months or even years after the rhinoplasty. So we've come to terms with that, and now our operations are much more precise. We no longer, most of us, don't do what's called a closed rhinoplasty. We make incisions across the columella. You know what that is? That's the narrow portion of skin that separates the nostrils. So we make an incision across that columella, and I lift up the skin of the nose like the hood of a car. Those of you who have fainted, well, I hope you're not driving. But we're now looking at the cartilages and the bones of the nose, as opposed to trying to do an operation upside down and inside out, which is the old way. So the newer operation, which is called an open rhinoplasty, it's not actually so new anymore. I learned it in my residency in the 1980s, but it has become more and more popular with each year since the mid-1980s. So the open rhinoplasty is what most plastic surgeons do now. We can see the cartilages, we can see the bones, and we can perform procedures on those structures that are much more precise than the way they were done before. And a lot of times, we're not making your nose smaller in a rhinoplasty. We're changing the angles of the nose. So there's some refinement. A lot of people have bulbous tips. And what is a bulbous tip? Well, you remember Carl Malden? Boy, he had a real bulbous tip, that actor. You know, a very, very prominent tip. Well, it should be a little more delicate and more slender. And, of course, a rhinoplasty in a woman is very different from a rhinoplasty in a man. And, by the way, despite what the press says, very few men have rhinoplasties. It's less than 5% of the rhinoplasty world. So in a woman, the operation is significantly different from a man because the tip is made to be more delicate, but not too delicate because we don't want your nostrils to collapse when you breathe. And by the way, is rhinoplasty an operation for breathing? No. It doesn't affect your breathing at all. It should not affect your breathing. What is an operation for breathing? It's a septoplasty. That's a completely different operation, usually performed by otolaryngologists, ear, nose, and throat doctors, as opposed to plastic surgeons. So rhinoplasties should not change your breathing. They can. That's not a good thing if they do. Sometimes we do minor procedures for the breathing during the rhinoplasty. But it certainly should not make your breathing worse. So a rhinoplasty is an operation that I do many of, and we're going to talk about it more when we return from our break. And we're also going to be talking about peels with lasers and things like that. And when we're back from this break, I'll take your phone calls. 800-848-9222. This is Dr. Arthur Perry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle with Dr. Arthur Perry. What's your wrinkle?
Gray skies are gonna clear up, put on a happy face. Brush off the clouds and cheer up, put on a happy face.
And yes, I won't start singing, be happy about that. But that's a great song, and it is the theme song for plastic surgery, of course. Put on a happy face. So we were talking about noses and rhinoplasties, my favorite operation. Why is it my favorite operation? You know what? Rhinoplasties are the most creative procedure in all of plastic surgery. They really are. You know, a bump on the nose can be seen across the room if it's a quarter millimeter in height. Think about that. In order to see an imperfection on your belly, it's got to be measured in quarter inches, you know, of a little bit of fat on your belly, or breast size. It's in, you know, ounces of a difference between one side and another, or drooping of your breast. But in the nose, nope, you can see a hump from across the room if it's a tiny little hump. So it's got to be just right. And every single nose is different. And there's no imaging technique, no CAT scan, MRI, or X-ray, or ultrasound that I can use as a plastic surgeon to determine just what your cartilages are going to look like when I open things up. So I examine your nose, I look at it, I feel the cartilages. But so many times I lift up the skin and am surprised by a crack in the cartilage. And then afterwards people tell me, oh, yeah, when they were 16, they got in a car accident, they didn't think they broke their nose, but they really had a bloody nose and it was all swollen. And sure enough, the cartilage is held together by scar tissue. It never heals the same way, and we discover these things in a rhinoplasty. But it's a very creative operation and one that I do enjoy. I like doing operations that no one can tell you've had. And that's the goal, in my opinion, of good plastic surgery. I don't want people to look at your nose and say, hey, Dr. Perry did your nose. That's called a signature nose, by the way. And there are some doctors that do the same operation in every person, and you can look at them and say, I know who did your operation, because they do them the same way. Every single nose that I do is different, and I study your nose for 2 full hours before a procedure. I do 2 hours of consultations, and then I do imaging on what's called the mirror image system, now in 3D, where we alter your images on the computer and actually make measurements that are accurate to a quarter millimeter on the computer, and I can plan the operation before we go in. But just like an architect that designs a house, he's got a set of plans, or she has her set of plans for the house, and then on site, things might be different, and the architect may have to make some changes, and the plastic surgeon never relies completely on the measurements made before surgery. It's an artistic endeavor, and changes occur on site. And I love doing rhinoplasties. It takes about 100 rhinoplasties for a plastic surgeon to get good at it. It's a very difficult operation. So, I've done thousands and thousands in my career now. So I'm happy to do them, and I enjoy doing them. And who has rhinoplasties, by the way? There's really two peak groups of people. They're women in their teens. So I start doing them in women that are 14 years old. That's about the age. Very occasionally younger. But the nose is virtually fully grown by then. And the limiting factor there is not the size of the nose, but the size of the brain, because we really want the person to be engaged in the operation, understand the operation. And we want that young lady to ask questions in a consultation. If someone sits across the table from me and doesn't say a word in the consultation, her parents do all the talking, I can't operate on them. I can't. I have to know that the child, the adolescent, is fully in command of the situation, understands what she's getting into, and wants the operation for herself, not for her mother or father. So that's one group. It's the 14 to 18 or 20-year-olds. That's the peak group. And then women who have just had their children, 35 and up. And really, mostly 35 to 45 have rhinoplasties. Those are people that would have wanted rhinoplasties earlier in life, but maybe they didn't have the financial resources to have them. And then while you have your children, as you know, it's kind of difficult to pay attention to things like that. How can you take time out and have a rhinoplasty when you have to get your kids to all over the place, right? And that's the common story that I hear. And then I do rhinoplasties in women during facelift procedures, because what happens is the cartilages continue to grow as you get older. The bones usually do not. In fact, the bones can actually change and regress a little bit, but they can get a little bit smaller in the face. But the cartilages continue to grow, so the nose thickens mostly at the tip. You know that in your ears. Your ears continue to grow, they elongate, and the cartilage continues to thicken as you get older, and it changes. So with the rhinoplasty, often it's just a tip rhinoplasty in older women, just changing that bulbous tip of the nose, and not actually making any changes in the bones of the nose, not taking down a hump, and not narrowing the nose. So that is what I do in a rhinoplasty in older women, older meaning older than teens. And who does better? Everybody does pretty well with rhinoplasty. Teens have a more difficult time adapting to the operation psychologically. And it's a funny thing, because every time a teenager looks in the mirror, she looks different. As opposed to you, who are in your 50s or 60s, you've seen that same face for a long time. It's aging a bit. It's getting wrinkled, but it's the same face you had since your 20s for the most part. So it is interesting that while the change in appearance is more easily dealt with by a younger person, surgery in general is not. And there's a typical appearance of a 16-year-old who has surgery, and they come in to see me the next day, and almost all of them, none of them, except the one I did last week, no one sleeps right after surgery if you're a teenager. If you're an adult, you do. It's kind of interesting. And often we really have to sit down and talk to people and get them to relax after the procedure. So interesting psychiatric and psychological aspects to rhinoplasty. All right, I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle? Right here on WABC. And the phone number is 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. So I'm going to switch gears a bit and talk just a little bit about this article that appeared on OZY. That's one of these websites. You know, there's a million websites. Now, back in the old days, there were a few newspapers and magazines, and it was a very defined universe of places to get information. And there were three TV stations in New York. Remember those days? Actually, four if you counted Channel 13. But now there's millions, I mean, not millions, but certainly tens of thousands of blogs and online websites and newspapers and all sorts of things. So here's one of these that caught my eye this week. And it was in this website called Ozzy, and it says, Ban Plastic Surgery and Grow Old Gracefully. That's the title. Ban Plastic. So, of course, I had to read this. Now, this was written by a young lady who graduated from college in 2010. So that puts her maybe in the late 20s. And, you know, she wrote some interesting things. She talked about how so many people now are getting non-invasive and invasive cosmetic surgery. There's 7.2 million people, according to the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, had Botox last year. But here's what she said. She says, it's time to grow up and see these people who are having cosmetic surgery for the pathetic attempts they are to prevent the inevitable. Bad English, by the way. She's a journalist, but what can I tell you? Women in their 30s and 40s shouldn't have to constantly poke, prod, tuck to look like fresh-faced teens. In fact, we should ban any and all cosmetic surgery procedures that aim to reverse aging or preserve youth. How about that? How about, I mean, do you laugh at this? Do you say, what gall? What, you know, how does someone have the nerve to tell other people what to look like? Does she have the nerve to tell you that you can't have clothing that doesn't have holes in it? Do you have to wear torn and tattered clothing? Can you not do your hair nicely? Is it a crime to comb your hair, color your hair, wear makeup? You know, I had to look at her LinkedIn page, and certainly she's wearing makeup. If you're wearing makeup, does that, you know, I mean, how does that go with not having cosmetic surgery? Should you ban makeup also? Kind of odd. I mean, she actually wrote a piece here that says legislation preventing cosmetic surgery for the purpose of looking younger is the answer, enforced with fines for those who violate the law. I mean, I don't even know. Is this social? It's not even social. I don't know what this is. But it is really a little bizarre, and it really, I have to say, you know, when I read these things, I think of a lot of women that come to see me who are in their 30s or 40s, and they tell me, well, their husbands don't want them to have cosmetic surgery. And then, interestingly, they had their surgery, and 10 years later, I get the phone call from the husband. Well, you know, do you do these procedures in men? And it's always interesting because I remember these things quite well. It's interesting that what is good for one person, you know, might not be right for the other. What a wife wants, the husband might say no, or it could be reversed, but for the most part, it isn't. It's like that. And what this woman, Molly, says is right for society. You know, I wonder when she gets those wrinkles, I wonder when she gets those jowls, if she'll feel the same way. So if you really look at the psychology of cosmetic surgery, there are many, many journal articles that have documented improvements in the sense of well-being, the improvement in self-esteem, the improvement in the psychological well-being of people that have had cosmetic surgery. You know, you could sit there and say, oh, this is a waste of money and a waste of time, and we should be putting our resources into other things and not worrying about how we look. But you know something? Here's one that was published in the journal Dermatologic Surgery in just April of this year. And it was something that looked at changes in body image after minor procedures. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about that. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle? 800-848-9222.
You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle with Dr. Arthur Perry. What's your wrinkle?
And what is your wrinkle? I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. This is the show about you, the show about your wrinkles and about how you look. And by the way, at the beginning of the show, I didn't tell everybody there is an amazing special for nighttime tonight. And the reason, I mean, you know, normally it goes for $65 a bottle. We're should I say giving away? No, we're selling nighttime four bottles for $99. And it really is for this week only. And you say, well, why? Is there something wrong? No, there's nothing wrong with it. But we've changed, I mentioned this before, we've changed our packaging. And the new packaging comes in just a few weeks. So we've got all this nighttime, not a lot left, but a significant amount with the older packaging, and it's perfectly good nighttime. It's great. It's a great opportunity. If you like my nighttime, if you use Night Skin before and then you use nighttime now, you're going to love this opportunity because you've got a 4-month supply. Just put it in your refrigerator, and remember, don't shake it when you open it. Open it nice and cold, and it'll be perfectly fine. So four for $99. Now, what you have to do is use the Good Night code. Good night. Good night. And no, not good night yet, but good night for the code. And buy four bottles of nighttime. You use the single bottle option, so four of those. And normally it's like $260 for four bottles. It's $99. So go ahead, use that code. This is your opportunity. All right, so we were talking about noses, we were talking about self-esteem, but let's go ahead and take a phone call first. Jill, what can I do for you? What is your wrinkle?
Yes, hello. First of all, I love your daywear. I use it all the time.
Thank you. And daytime. Daytime you're talking about.
Daytime, the daytime, yes. And I ordered the other products because I had such a good result.
Thank you.
Just a plug for plastic surgery in general. Last year, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I had to have reconstructive surgery. I had to have chemo. But during it, I'm 54 years old. And while I was getting all that stuff, in between I had some face fillers and some Botox. At the end of the year, people said, you never look better. And it gave me the boost, and people said, you know, they're scared to look different. I said, I'm 54, I'm looking different, older. And so I'd rather look different, younger and prettier, different.
You know, Jill, that is a good point. And, you know, when I read things by this 28-year-old woman who has yet to get her first wrinkle and who says, let's ban cosmetic surgery, she just doesn't get it. She doesn't understand what you're saying. Do you know that my mother passed away 2 years ago when she was 90. She still said to me, I want some filler. It's like, oh, my God, come on, Ma. You know, 90, and she had lung cancer, but you know, everybody's got self-esteem, and they want to maintain their appearance. So while you're on the line, let me bring up, stay on the line, some of these studies that are very recent. So here's the one in the journal Dermatologic Surgery, and this is looking at quality of life, body image, and self-esteem following just things like Botox and wrinkle fillers, like the things that you had. So they looked at 75 women who underwent these procedures, and they looked at their moods before and after about 6 weeks after treatment, and they found that body image, quality of life improved. And self-esteem, well, self-esteem, not that big a change in this particular study, but body image and quality of life both were greatly improved, statistically significant. So, you know, that's a very important thing. There was another study in, believe it or not, the Journal of Pediatrics, yes. And they looked at teenagers who had breast reductions. And a lot of people say, oh, my goodness, why would anyone want to do that? Well, you know what? If you have very large breasts, there are psychological aspects to it. There are physical aspects to having large breasts. And most people who have excessively large breasts would rather have them just be normal size. So they looked at 102 adolescents with excessively large breasts in this particular study. And it was published last year, November of 2017. And the conclusion was that the reduction mammoplasty, that's a breast reduction, an outpatient procedure, it was significantly associated with improvements in health-related quality of life and also breast-related symptoms in these women, with measurable improvements in physical and psychosocial well-being evident by 6 months after the surgery. And they looked also as late as 5 years after the surgery, and they had the same benefits. So, you know, tell that to Molly, who wrote that article about that we should ban cosmetic surgery. How about the facelift patient? There was a study that was just published, and this was in Facial Plastic Surgery, June of 2017. And they did a review of the literature, the psychology literature of facelift patients. And now there have been a number of studies that showed that there was a significant improvement in depression after facelift surgery. But not everybody gets improvement, but certainly improvement in body image was seen in the majority of people. In fact, satisfaction was 95% of the women that had facelifts, 95% of them were satisfied, and they saw improvements in their body image, their self-confidence, their self-esteem, decreased self-consciousness about their appearance. So, you know, these are very, very important things to people who are aging, who look in the mirror, you know, and don't want to see someone that is inching towards the end, you know, and that's really what it is. When I was on the Oprah show and I mentioned, I made a statement, I've said this on the show before, I said to Oprah, you know, women come to me and they tell me that they look in the mirror and they get upset when they see their mothers. And I actually got booed by the audience. And the reason, they didn't quite understand what people were telling me. It's not that you're upset to see your mother. It's that when you look in the mirror and you see your mother, or in some cases, you know, men with their fathers, they realize that they're getting older. And what was the inevitable outcome for their parents? We all know, you know, as you inch towards your mortality. So when you see that, it does get upsetting. And to do things that are not high risk, you know, things like fillers and facelifts and things like that, which are reasonable procedures. We're not talking about procedures like cardiac surgery that has a, you know, a significant death rate from the surgery, but you need that. We're talking about procedures that are reasonable to do. Why would someone, if they have the financial means and if they're healthy enough, why would they not do it? So anyway, Jill, long-winded, but there's a lot of studies that really show just what you're saying.
Yes.
All right. Jill,
so
you still
God
there?
Bless you. Yes, you do your thing, doctor, and what you're doing is a great thing, and that woman, she just don't get it.
she doesn't. Anyway, thanks so much for calling.
Okay, this is, thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you very much. This is Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle right here on WABC. So we've got a short, about 3 minutes. I want to tell you about sunscreen boosters. What is a sunscreen booster? You know, if you go to the store and look for sunscreens, first of all, if you've listened to me, you know that I feel the mineral sunscreens are the best sunscreens. And they're the best sunscreens for a bunch of reasons. The most important reason is they do not get absorbed into your body. They stay on the surface of your skin and they reflect the sunlight. So zinc oxide and titanium dioxide are the only mineral sunscreen agents. Everything else, all those chemistry names that you see on the label, the 15 other chemicals that are FDA-approved sunscreens, are considered chemical sunscreens. They get absorbed into your body. They stay in your body for up to 2 full days, and they do all sorts of things. Most of those are endocrine disruptors. That means they act like the hormones, most commonly estrogen, in your body. So I like zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. Zinc oxide is actually better. The reason it's better is because it doesn't cause as much lightening of your skin. So here's the story. If you go to the store and look for a mineral sunscreen, you'll see a bunch now, and there are all sorts of different brands. We won't mention the brands, but there's a big fraud out there, a big fraudulent field within the mineral sunscreens. You just wouldn't believe what's going on, and here's what is going on. So you look at one particular brand, which I can't say, that says an SPF of 50, I believe, and you look at the zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, and they measure up to about 10% in that. And it says complete mineral sunscreen. And I know, as a scientist, as a chemist, as a physician, I know that doesn't add up. And the reason it doesn't add up is because in order to get an SPF of 50 with minerals, you have to have somewhere in the area of 22 to 25% mineral sunscreen, zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. But they only have 10%. So they're not listing on the label the chemical sunscreen agents that have to be in there. So what are they doing? They're using something called boosters. Boosters are chemicals that act like sunscreens. They are sunscreens, but they're not FDA-approved sunscreens. Boy, is that sinister. Think about this. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk a little bit more about it. These companies are telling you you're getting a mineral sunscreen, but you're not really getting just a mineral sunscreen. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry, 800-848-9222. Carolyn, stay on the line. We'll be with you when we return.
You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle with Dr. Arthur Perry. What's your wrinkle?
And what is your wrinkle? I'm Dr. Arthur Perry, board-certified plastic surgeon, host of this show. And some of you may wonder, am I a real practicing plastic surgeon? Yes, I am. I've got my office in central New Jersey in Somerset County, near the New Brunswick, Bridgewater, Princeton area, and one in Manhattan, right across the street from Saks Fifth Avenue, you know, about a block from Rockefeller Center. I love the area, not as much as the 57th Street area I used to be in, but there's still some great restaurants in the area, and you know, that's why I'm there. There are more restaurants within 5 blocks of my Manhattan office than probably 10 miles of my New Jersey office. Really amazing. All right, we were talking about sunscreen boosters. So what are these chemicals? They are chemicals that are, they're sunscreens, just like the sunscreens that the FDA approved, except they're not FDA approved. And so they can't be listed on the label as sunscreens. So you'd think that the companies would say, oh, we can't use those. But no, that's not what happens. They use them because they're allowed. The FDA allows them to be used but not labeled as sunscreen agents. But when they check for the SPF, then they register as an increase in the SPF, which blocks measures ultraviolet light B-type blocking. So there's UVA and there's UVB. So to make a long story short, what's happening here is our companies are labeling their sunscreens as mineral sunscreens. They're putting in some zinc oxide and some titanium dioxide. So they are mineral sunscreens, but they're not putting in enough, anywhere near enough, that would give them the appropriate SPF that they're putting on the label. Now, I'm not saying that they're cheating on the SPF. They certainly are not doing that. They're putting it, they're getting an appropriate SPF, but they're using chemicals that are not FDA approved as sunscreens in order to get that SPF. It gets complicated, but it's really, really kind of nasty when you think about it. So in general, it takes about, in order to raise an SPF about 2 points, you need about 1% of zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. That means if you have about 10% zinc oxide in your skincare, you're going to get an SPF of about 20 or so. Yeah, it's, you know, it depends on the preparation. So 10% might get you as high as 30. So I said that a little bit wrong. So, but it certainly is not going to get you in the area of 50. It is interesting, and it's one of the problems with the skincare industry. Carolyn, what can I do for you? What's your wrinkle? Hello, Carolyn.
Yes. I'm interested in information about corrective surgery for droopy eyelids.
All right. What? Now, Carolyn, first, how old are you?
I'm 78.
You said that sheepishly. That's a good thing.
I've had recent cataract surgery, and my eyes are just, they're so droopy with a helmet on them, and I'd like that corrected if possible.
So is your vision actually being impaired by your extra skin on your eyelids?
Maybe partially a little. I manage all right.
Okay, well, sometimes that happens. As we get a lot of skin on our upper eyelids, it actually is almost like wearing a baseball hat, and it interferes with your vision, particularly when you're going uphill. So if you're driving and you go uphill and you're wearing a baseball hat, you know that it's, I imagine you don't wear a baseball hat when you're driving, but those of you who do know that you have to tilt the hat up because otherwise you're going to be interfering with your vision. And that's what happens with your eyelids. So sometimes insurance will cover eyelid surgery. So tell that to Molly, who wrote that shouldn't have cosmetic surgery. But seriously, it's not that common. I actually am doing one, I think this week, I'm doing an upper eyelid blepharoplasty is the name of the operation, which is for insurance coverage, which is a rare thing. I don't think I've done one for insurance coverage in several years, but this particular person has a lot of blockage of her upper visual fields, and so she went to an independent ophthalmologist who did visual field testing, and if it's documented, maybe you can get that covered. But in 95-97% of people, it is considered cosmetic. And the way we do this, by the way, is with you awake, Carolyn. And by the way, 78 is not too old to have this surgery, particularly upper eyelids. Are you bothered by your lower eyelids also?
No, they're fine. It's mostly the upper eyelid. That's
good.
Problem.
Good. Because as you do get older into your late 70s, there are more problems doing lower eyelid surgery than upper eyelid surgery. But with upper eyelids, it's a pretty straightforward procedure under sedation. So we have an anesthesiologist there. They give you just a little touch of, I think it's vodka or vermouth or something like that they give you. No, it's actually called Versed or Propofol, one of those drugs.
Uh-huh.
And they make you kind of, so that it doesn't bother you when I numb you up. It takes about 3 or 4 minutes to numb you up. And then the operation itself takes about an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And what we do is actually remove a little bit of skin and a little bit of fat. Most people have some fat close to their nose, a little puff of fat in their upper eyelid, and a little bit in the middle also. And some people have it out closer to their ear underneath their eyebrow. That's called roof fat, R-O-O-F, and it stands for a big fancy word that I won't bore you with. But that's we remove those little fat pads, and the artistry of doing this operation is not removing too much skin so that you look funny, mm-hmm. and not removing so much fat that your eyes are sunken in. So, you know, we could just take fat forever almost with this operation, and I've seen people look overdone and have sunken in eyes, and that's the artistry of this operation is doing it just right.
I see.
So, Carolyn, it's a very straightforward procedure, and it doesn't hurt afterwards, and it really doesn't hurt. I'm not kidding. Tylenol is all you should need after an eyelid lift. It's been a number of years since I've given a patient a narcotic like Percocet after this surgery because it just doesn't hurt.
Well, that's good to hear. That's very nice.
But you look terrible afterwards for about a week or so. You look like you went about 2 or 3 rounds with Mike Tyson because your eyelids are bruised and swollen, and you're going to hide in your house for about a week or so. And then you can come out when the stitches come out at about 5 or 6 days. You can get out. Maybe where do you live? You live in Brick, I see. Brick, New Jersey.
Yes.
So if you live in Brick, New Jersey, you'll go to the Wegmans in East Brunswick. Actually, there's not one in East Brunswick. There's one in Manalapan, right? So that's where you'll go because it's far enough away you won't run into your friends that week. But you can go to the supermarket in Brick the second week because you'll be looking pretty good.
Very good.
All right, Carolyn.
Thank you so much for all your information, and I'll be giving you a call someday.
Okay, thanks so much, and I look forward to meeting you. This is Dr. Arthur Perry, and this is What's Your Wrinkle? Right here on WABC. So I wanted to talk about snake oil in 2018. What's snake oil? You know, when people try and sell you something that doesn't really work, you know, for maybe hair growth, that's, in my opinion, kind of like snake oil that they used to sell. So, you know, there are 2 FDA-approved drugs to grow hair in men or women who actually only one, I believe, in women, and that's minoxidil, Rogaine. But there's another one, finasteride, which is a drug that's used for prostatic hypertrophy, big prostates in men. And a side effect is that men grow hair with it. And so those are the 2 FDA-approved substances, drugs. They're both drugs. Minoxidil is now over-the-counter. You don't need a prescription for it. You can buy generic, and you put it on twice a day, morning and night. The statistics on minoxidil are about 35%, something like that, of men will grow hair with minoxidil, and it's somewhere in the area of like 45% or so with finasteride. But the problem with finasteride is that it is somewhat controversial, and there was a question whether or not the side effect of growing hair could also there could be a small side effect of maybe getting prostate cancer, and that has not actually been answered yet. It turns out there's a lower incidence of prostate cancer with men who use this finasteride, but the ones that get prostate cancer get a more aggressive form of prostate cancer. So there's not a good answer yet whether or not that is something that people should be doing. So a lot of people have worked on finding other substances that work like finasteride. So how does that work? There's testosterone. We all know what testosterone is, and it influences hair in different ways. In men, testosterone causes hair on the head to kind of go away, but hair on the body to be to get more luxurious as we get older. So you get more hair in other places. It's one of the things that proves that God has a sense of humor. You get hair where you don't want it, and you lose hair where you want it, right? So we've looked for all sorts, we meaning scientists, not me, have looked for all sorts of chemicals and botanicals and rosemary oil and forsythia oil and all these different things, putting it on people's scalps to try and grow hair. And so far, you know, there are things that work a little bit, but not enough, I think, to waste your money, particularly compared to what's out there prescription-wise, which is finasteride or Rogaine. But there is one. I'm going to give you a scoop. There's one that's coming, and I can't wait for it to come. I'll use it myself. It will be marketed by Allergan as a drug. It's bimatoprost. It is Latisse, already FDA-approved to grow eyelashes. I prescribe it. I have women put it on their eyebrows that are thinning also. And guess what? People have put it on their hair, on their scalps rather, and it grows hair. Not FDA approved yet, but it will real soon. So that's the one I'm waiting for, bimatoprost. Stay away from the snake oil. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. I've got so much to talk about. I could do this for 2 hours. But if you're interested, go to my Facebook page. I post many of these things there, facebook.com/Dr. Arthur Perry. And for the products, it's /Dr. Perry's. We'll see you all next week. Thanks for great engineering. I have so much to talk about. Next week, 6 o'clock. See you there. Bye-bye now.